You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning, 8:06. Nice to have you here back up north on this Monday morning. It is October 13th. It is Indigenous Peoples Day. It's a holiday for some folks. Parker Olson producing the show down in Madison Studio A2. And joining us now from Madison Studio A1, our friends from 92.7 WMGX.
That's 92.7 WMGX.
It just rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it?
I know. Got to get rid of the 7, but yeah. I almost no one will listen.
That. Yep, there's John and Gordy. Guys, how are you?
Good. Doing all right, Pat. How are you? Happy Monday.
It's nice. It's a nice Monday. Nice to be able to wear the Brewer gear for a little bit longer here, heading into game one of the league championship series.
See this right here, right on.
Oh, there it is. Yes. It's subtle. It's understated. And yet
it's a Brewer t-shirt.
Yeah. And I put all my Cubs gear away for another year.
What a whiner.
No, speaking of whining, let's get Gordy into this right away.
Okay.
There were at the team photo after defeating the Cubs on Saturday, Trevor McGill grabbed one of the L flags from one of the fans and held up a fly the L flag above the team photo. And you heard from some social media circles, you had that's just poor sportsmanship. And yet there are also Cubs fans who were like, oh yeah, we'd have totally done the same thing. I mean, they get it that in the moment of beating your division rival. Yep, so Gordy, Milwaukee Brewers flying the L, classless or understandable?
I get it, and I like the Brewers. I mean, I grew up in around Chicago and moved up here, 25 years ago or whatever it was, 30 years ago. But I now that the Cubs are out of it, I'm going to root for the Brewers.
I'll throw my two cents in. Yeah. I'm from Milwaukee, and I ought to know. old beer slogan.
Is that Pabst Blue Ribbon?
Yes, it's Milwaukee. Pabst Blue Ribbon. I'm singing it into my head right now. But I think that because this rivalry is so friendly. Yeah. I actually think it's a friendly rivalry. I think that it's okay to do the L flag.
Yeah.
In fun, poking fun. So that's where I stand on it.
Okay.
I'm not inebriated.
There are still plenty of folks, scattered throughout Wisconsin, older folks who predate the Brewers' arrival in 1970. Yes. So the Cubs were all that they knew and continue their Cubs fandom to this day. That is completely understandable. Yes. It's just that, this year it feels particularly good because first it was against a division rival, one managed by our former manager, Craig Counsell. And now the next step is to exercise the demons of 2018 in going up against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I am nervous about it. Don't get me wrong. But the fact that we swept the Dodgers in all six games this season, and with everything else that this team has done, I'm not sitting here fixated on losing to them in 2018. It's now about, I think we can take these guys this time around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nobody's jumping in to agree with this.
No, I agree.
Hey, Dodgers have a great team. I mean, they wouldn't get this far if they weren't great. And
Or have a $500 million payroll.
Well, there you go.
As well. Which, if maybe we could take the Dodgers payroll and just use that to buy out Luke Fickell, and then everybody would be happy,
I'm not really into baseball very much, but I have to say that the Brewers looked not as sharp as they could have looked during the series.
Really?
Yeah.
That's just an observation I'm making. I don't know a lot about it. And by the way, why do they change pitchers so often during the playoffs?
Well, that's a great observation. They do that. Playoff baseball is a little bit different than regular season. So they use their best pitchers and they use them as often as possible, depending on what the lineup looks like.
Yeah.
So, those games are spaced out enough that they can use their pitchers and they're ready to go, two or three days later again. So they use the very best.
Well, okay, but the pitcher like three strikeouts in a row, and then they replace him. And yeah. I'm just like, what's going on here? I just don't understand baseball.
Yeah,
I do, and I am so looking forward to this. But there will be these nerve wracking moments, like when Jacob Mizorowski was on the mound, because he'd been so erratic at times.
Yeah.
That it was nice to see. He kept things, except for giving up the one home run, which really frightened me for a moment, but he kind of held it together after that. So I'm just thrilled to have mid-October baseball that is still relevant. By the way, real-time corrections here. The song lyric goes, "We're from Milwaukee and we ought to know. It's good old Blatt's beer wherever Blatt's you go. Yeah. Kegs, cans, and bottles all taste the same. The three best is one beer. Blatt's is the name."
It was
marketed directly against Pabst Blue Ribbon in the so-called working class market of the time.
Well, that didn't work out in the long term, did it? We thought it was Pabst.
Yeah, well, Blatt's went away a long time ago.
Yeah. Oh, Blatt's went away. I haven't even heard of Schlitz is long gone. And
you would think they would have played off the name Blatt's. I'm getting Blatt's. Right?
Why not? Let's get Blatt's.
Yeah. That was like something out of The Simpsons. They would have had a lot of fun with that instead of Duff beer. Goodness. Mm. Yeah, talking to John Accordi here. In the Chicago area, Old Style was like the king of the market there. This beer brewed in La Crosse for all those years. And there were some good stories there about the marketing of Old Style down there back in the day, and people just really responded to it, probably because they didn't want to drink anything out of Milwaukee with the rivalry and everything else. But this would be this is under the category of Madison history here, because Milwaukee, it was all Blatt's and Schlitz and Pabst for a while. And Miller was kind of like, on the undercard, but Miller somehow has survived everybody. But in terms of history of Madison, I wonder would somebody be able to say, oh my gosh, in the 50s or 60s or 70s, I mean, it was this, if it was Old Style or if it was one of the Milwaukee beers or heaven forbid something from Missouri.
Wow. That's actually a really good question.
Yeah, I can't think of any. Who's
the official beer historian of the Madison market? I wonder.
We'll have to find that person now, I guess.
Yeah.
That's our homework. Thank you.
That's for the homework. No problem. Yeah. Things change. I'm sitting here over at the home of Leinenkugel's, and that brewery ain't producing Leinenkugel's anymore.
That's sad.
Yeah, whatever happened? Did they have the restaurant? Or did they keep that?
They have the Liney Lodge, which is basically a gift shop and a tasting facility. They're still using part of the brewery for, I forget how they call it, like test brews or micro brews
they're allowed to do that.
Yeah, they're allowed to do that. And so, they're trying to milk whatever they can out of the name for as long as they can. Mm-hmm. And now you kind of are in that period of, later on, nobody was drinking Pabst for the longest time. And now PBR is back. And now there's a Pabst Light that is really catching on. And so what will be the future of Leinenkugel? And will that come back? And you really have to have a history discussion like this to realize, things do change. It doesn't seem like it. But over time, people's tastes change as well.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But Hibernia is like a really popular around Lambeau Field, right? They've got a brewery right there and everything. Yeah.
There was a Hibernia in Eau Claire as well, and then Walter's Beer, which we mocked. We did a commercial at the college TV station. The slogan was "Come taste what's flowing through Eau Claire." Walter's Beer did not make it. Tony writes on YouTube: the beer historian of Madison is Luke Mathers, I believe. But he's off today, so we can't ask him about that. We're talking to John and Gordy from 92.7 WMDX down in Madison. Gordy has spent his weekend not only nursing his wounds from the Cubs losing, but from all the paper cuts you get from moving boxes.
Yes, moving from one side of town to the other, from the near west side to the far east side.
He's not saying it, but he's moving from where I live to someplace else.
Yeah, I need to be a little farther away.
Thanks a lot, man.
Are you moving on up as George and Wheezy did, or
I'm
are you,
downsizing a little
downsizing.
Bit. I've got too much. The house that I rented the last year and a half or so, it's just it's too much for me. It's too big. Mm-hmm. I don't need that much space. It was time to downsize, so this is the way I'm doing it.
And your neighbors didn't like either.
Well, the neighbors didn't like the gazebo in the backyard. I don't know. I don't know what their problem was.
Gazebo. Are you filming Hallmark movies back there?
No. No, it was all good. I don't know. Okay. I don't know what they found objectionable.
I feel bad about the gazebo. We really didn't go out there and party enough.
The gazebo so people could come over and hang out, but nobody did.
It's like nobody comes to your party. That's
so. Did the gazebo stay with the house, or did you pack it up?
It was like a portable tent. Tent device. Yeah. Gazebo tent.
Material. We had to tie it down.
Yeah, think about this.
It was like a tent, but it was great. I mean, I enjoyed my time out there. But it was a party of one, but yeah.
You know what? But that would make even for a good studio, because as you know, as you can look on your TV screen and say, Madison Studio A2, of course, is a glorified broom closet.
Yeah.
If we kind of reconfigured it and put the gazebo in there, and Parker was just always broadcasting from a gazebo, basically playing the role of like, he was like Woody Harrelson on Cheers. He's just the friendly young bartender there.
Could you put me on the roof, maybe? I think we could do that.
Yes, I think that
the roof here.
Yeah, sure. We could put the tent up there.
Yeah, that's it.
We've been up there.
Now, the gazebo was great for about a year and a half, but then we got some pretty gusty winds. And I would, the first year, I took it down a couple of times when there were 50-mile-an-hour winds predicted. And I thought, okay, I'm going to take it down. Second year, I thought, you know, it stood up pretty well last year. I'm just going to leave it up. Uh-oh. That was a bad decision because it did start to tear a little bit in a few places. Yeah. And that was,
at least
that
it didn't was fly kind of a away. Sign.
And Parker's young. Well, yeah, I was going to say Parker's young and skinny enough that it could be a balloon boy situation where he just he gets there blown away with the gazebo.
Yeah, Mary Poppins.
Yeah. Like a hand glider. There you go.
Well, look, just provide traffic reports while you're doing it. At least be useful. I mean, if you're going to get carried away by the wind, at least try to earn that paycheck, okay? And, John, how are you doing? You took a little tumble the other day.
I did. I fell in the yard. I have a very lumpy yard, and I tripped on one of the lumps and landed face first in the grass.
He face planted.
Oh, man, that was something else. Yeah.
Got a little cut on his nose.
Yeah, right on the bridge of my nose. It protected my nose. It's so big that it protected my forehead from hitting the ground.
So, built-in airbag? Is that what we're trying to say here?
Much yes. Now I have a border collie, and that border collie followed me into the house. Did not do anything else. It made sure that I made it into the house, and you know, that's what border collies do. You know, that's my pet.
I would have preferred
you injured your finger too.
Well, I injured my finger on the
just a klutz, handles. Pat. I
that's like falling apart.
He's got a brace on a finger.
Oh my!
Yeah, you know, we have levers. I like to say lever. It's a lever, and you know, I put a lever on all our doors in the house because it's easy when your hands are full of groceries. You know, you just pop the lever up or down. You know, but I did that with my finger, and it really hurt a nerve or a muscle, and I'm injured again.
My goodness.
I know. I'm trying to gather some sympathy around the station.
Maybe we can we nurse it with some Fauerbach beer? Because I've got a guy, Larry from Deerfield, on the line showing us a photo of Fauerbach beer, a Madison brewery. And he says he went to college with Pete Fauerbach, whose dad was the last of the line. Fauerbach beer ringing a bell there?
I think it's in Cross Plains, if I'm not mistaken.
Fauerbach. Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
I like this. All right. For more scintillating beer history, tune in to John and Gordy weekday mornings from 6 to 8 on our Madison station, 92.7 WMDX. Catch it through the Civic Media app if you're out of town. Hey, guys, thank you very much. Hope you have a great day.
All right, thanks, Pat. You too.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to be talking to State Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire about support for higher education in Wisconsin. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. It is a Monday morning. It is October 13th, 2025, Indigenous Peoples Day, a holiday for some folks, including a Courier newsroom. So no newsletter today, but it will resume tomorrow. And as always, you can sign up at upnorthnewswi.com and click on subscribe up in the top banner. You can also get our Sunday morning newsletter with its question of the week. And this week we ask, where do you stand on mining up north? Because once again, there was more test drilling done potentially for someday mining for zinc or gold or whatever else they think that they can find up there, but at what price? And so I ask if you are opposed to mining up there, if you're in favor of mining up there and you trust the companies to regulate themselves, or if you're okay with mining, but only if there are some strong regulations that, you know, kind of keep things from getting out of hand. So again, to see our question of the week first, sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. State Representative Jody Emerson now joins us, represents the Eau Claire area. Representative Emerson, how are you?
I'm doing well, Pat. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thanks. We're going to talk in our next segment about a new package of bills that you're putting forward on higher education and supporting it in the state. So we just wanted to, in this segment, cover some of the more local matters that are out there. We were just talking to John and Gordy about Madison and Milwaukee area beers. And I know the Eau Claire scene, the Chippewa Valley scene, is much more than Leinenkugel. I don't know how many events you and others have held at the Brewing Project, and there's Lazy Monk Brewing and all that. But you go way back, and you know, we were talking about Walter's Beer was there. There was the Hibernia Beer Garden for a while there. Did I miss any? I mean, between you and Julian, you probably strike me as people that, you know, grabbed a six pack and drank it in the car a few times at Carson Park.
Oh, no, we were so young that when we were dating that I wasn't even legal before we got married. So
to be clear, we're talking about the beer, folks, in case, please don't write anything about that.
So of course I never had any alcohol in a car in Carson Park or anything. So, yeah, I'm trying to think of, I can't think of the older breweries that are now gone, but you know, there's a couple of great little, you know, Modicum Brewing is in the area, and, it's always fun to find those little startup breweries.
So. And the history of brewing in that area is such that the oldest continuously operating business in town is the Amber Inn, which at the time, back when breweries had their own bars, and I don't recall if it was Walter's or if it was some other brew, but Amber Inn is still open, still serving great cheeseburgers, by the way. Oh my goodness.
Such a
good history of brewing there that I just wanted to continue the conversation over here. So we've got the assembly in session tomorrow, and one of the bills that is being taken up, and I've talked about it briefly before, but you know, want your thoughts on it as well. This Republican package of bills meant to end what they consider to be the onerous regulations in the state, that we're one of the most heavily regulated states in the country. And when you think of regulations as safeguards for the environment and for consumers and for employees, my response to that is good. It means we're doing something right in this state. Not that every regulation is perfect, but I would much rather have, you know, a proper amount of safeguards than to let, you know, business and industry run roughshod over the rest of us.
Yeah. I mean, talking about your question of the week with mining, I just think, you know, if we don't have some safeguards and some parameters in place, we're going to have some, you know, fly by night mining operation that's going to come in, dump a whole bunch of chemicals in there, take the things out that they want to, and leave and quote unquote go bankrupt with that company so that there's no legal ramifications at all. And, you know, safeguards, regulations are there to safeguard us all. It's there to make sure that the company is working in a safe way for workers and leaving the environment safe for the rest of us who stay here. So I don't think all deregulation is appropriate. There's, like you said, there's probably a few we could roll back here and there.
Well, so. It's all a matter of ongoing monitoring as things are brought to your attention. I think, for example, of the the liquor industry overhaul bill from the last session. We've had on the program a couple of times guests who have said that, you know, they would like to revisit that for, you know, so-called wedding barns and other venues. There is always an opportunity to look at things and look at modifying them. But the answer is not like in this Republican bill. Well, every regulation disappears after 7 years, unless an agency takes steps to renew it. That just sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Well, and I hope that seventh year, that eighth year isn't an election year, because, you know, we only meet like twice in the beginning of the year and then are out for the rest of the year. So it could get like the wild, wild west at some point. So.
Mm-hmm. We have been talking about not just this session, but also basically the lack of sessions since the budget bill passed. There's a headline in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this morning from Molly Beck saying, "Democrats vying for control argue lawmakers need to work more." And she notes that the state Senate hasn't met since it passed the state budget in early July. The state assembly has met on the floor 13 times this year by comparison. And Senate Democratic leader Dianne Hesselbein says the Senate hasn't met for 90 days. It's terrible. We have a lot of work to do in the state of Wisconsin. I urge my Republican colleagues in the state Senate to get to work. So this is all to say, Jody, that y'all seem to be doing your part over in the West Wing of the Capitol and need to talk to those people with senitude over in the South Wing.
I'm glad you brought up my favorite word, senitude. But
senitude, it was.
Yeah, we've been working really hard in the assembly, lots of committee meetings, and you know, doing a few more floor sessions than the Senate. But
yeah,
you know, you were in the Senate, Pat. You know how that goes. The assembly does the work, and the Senate takes the credit. So.
I don't know that I'd put it that way, but definitely this Senate needs a kick in the pants. We're talking to State Representative Jody Emerson, and we'll talk about her package of bills to promote and support higher education in Wisconsin. On the other side, I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Along with the daily newsletter from Up North News, our friends here at Civic Media have a daily newsletter that they have begun recently over at Substack. To sign up, head over to civicmediatoday.substack.com. Again, that's civicmediatoday.substack.com to get signed up. It's all about, it's got all kinds of show highlights, talk about the guests, news stories, other links. So get yourself signed up for Civic Media Today. And again, if you didn't follow it earlier, as far as the Brewers playing the Dodgers in the National League Championship Series, Game 1 coverage starts at 6:30 this evening on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Oshkosh, Racine, Park Falls, and Hayward. Our guest now is State Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire, who has put together a new package of legislation designed to strengthen and protect the state's higher education system. And Jody, let's start with the need for a package like this in the first place. Then we'll break down each of the elements. But you know, why did you feel it was necessary to have a package of legislation with all these types of elements? Is it like a lack of support, or do you feel like higher education is being undermined in the state, or what led to this?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Pat. I'm the ranking Democrat on our Colleges and Universities Committee, and I've served on this committee since I got into office in 2019, and it feels to me like in that committee, we are just talking about a lot of the perceived boogeyman instead of impacts of things that are really truly impacting students' lives. And, you know, when I talk to students, I'm hearing about the crushing debt that they have. Well, Wisconsin taxpayers pay in about 17% of what it costs for college education now. You know, back when you and I were in school, that was closer to about 50%. And so that's part of the reason why it is so expensive. There's a lot of things that need to change in higher education. I would say respect is a big piece of it. We need to stop having these conversations about, you know,
indoctrination.
Yes, comes to mind. I was trying to think of a nice way of putting thank you for jumping in.
The other word that comes to mind is micromanagement. When you talk about what the boogeymen that they're talking about are all these ways to micromanage. Again, the alleged party of small government is all about micromanaging the educators who are there and denigrating them with insults, you know, like indoctrination and things like that. So to actually see a package of legislation that supports higher education is rather noteworthy. So let's break these down. There's five different areas. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, so we've got a couple of bills that we really highlighted in our press conference last week that really focus on students. You know, the faster that students can get out of school and with a degree, the more likely they are to pay back their loans and be successful in the future. And so we've got a bill that deals with student success and retention. And we also have another bill that mirrors what is happening in Madison with the Bucky's Promise. So any family that earns under $71,000 for the entire family would get free tuition at any campus around the state. And we think that's, you know, incredibly important. Minnesota has something like that. Several other states do. And this is a bill that says to our working class families, you can get higher education if that's something that you want to do and are willing to put in the work. Don't let money be a factor with this. And then the other three bills that we put out really deal with staff and faculty. So restoring shared governance, restoring tenure, restoring collective bargaining. All these are things that went away during the Walker era when the insult to higher education really started full force in our state. And we think that if we're going to be micromanaging all of these people, we at least need to make sure that they've got a seat at the table so that they can have input as well. So
when you talk about restoring shared governance, the decision-making authority for students and faculty, that again, you said that was something that Walker, Scott Walker and Republican legislators took away. What is the current situation compared to what it should be under this package?
With the current situation, it's really a top-down approach. If the chancellor wants something, if the Board of Regents wants something, if the president wants something, it's going to happen. So these are all kind of shared governance and collective bargaining really work hand in hand. They're very similar. So think of the workload requirements that came through in the budget for higher ed, for the UWs in particular. This is all being decided at the Board of Regents level, and people who are on campus, who are doing the research, who are doing the work, don't get a say in, you know, does this mentoring of all these students, does that count for a class load or does it not? The universities are not the way that they were back in the 70s, where people go to lectures, they come in, they take a test, and that's their grade. Everything is a lot more hands-on than it ever used to be. And we want to make sure that the workload requirements reflect the work that all of these professors and other teachers are doing.
And then there's also the note there about restoring tenure protections for faculty. And again, that's a a famous bugaboo for folks on the far right. So let's take it back to basics and explain why is tenure important? Why is it important for faculty to have the protection of tenure in the ways that they teach their classes?
Yeah, so one of our new people this year, Ben DeSmit, is really leading on this bill, and I wish he was here to really make the case for this. He's worked in universities before and taught classes, and he's got some great arguments for it. But really, it comes down to it is getting harder for us to recruit people to come in teach at our universities of Wisconsin, whether it's Madison, Milwaukee, or one of the smaller comprehensive campuses around. Not having tenure is a key protection that most people are looking for. That means that if you say one thing wrong that gets blown up on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, you won't get fired immediately. Even when there is tenure, there still is a way that people can lose their jobs. So this isn't some almighty protection that people can just, you know, slough off and never work again and still get paid. Tenure just means that in our current political climate, President Trump can't make a phone call and fire somebody.
Or Derek Van Orden, in the case of
Can
put up a
Dave
tweet
Murphy,
that gets a teacher fired. Yeah, right.
Exactly. You never know what's going to happen. And so in the political climate where higher ed is getting beaten up time and time again, this really does give some protections to people. But the bigger piece that we're seeing is it's impacting who is actually coming into the state and taking these jobs.
We're talking to State Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire about a package of bills designed to support and strengthen higher education in Wisconsin. And, you know, the topic of tenure protection, I think it's one of those that was prior to this year, it was a little tougher to make that argument because it was easy to paint tenure as something that could be abused. But I think the script has been flipped on this, thanks to Trump and Derek Van Orden and everything in the wake of the Charlie Kirk murder, where, you know, people who say they're for free speech until a speech that they don't like. And now they're actually using their power as a congressman, as a president or whatnot, to try to get people fired from their jobs. It seems like this year, amidst the sweeping arm gesture, the wreckage of what we've had to deal with this year, it becomes a little bit easier to stand up for things like actually protecting the free expression of people like university faculty.
Yeah. And I mean, I just want to make it clear that, you know, professors, teachers, assistants, all the folks who get our keep our universities running, whether it's maintenance workers or whoever, they all deserve a safe place to work. They deserve to be compensated well for their time, and they deserve to have some say in their working conditions. And that's what collective bargaining is. You know, as we saw during the COVID pandemic, I think that really flipped the script on what it's like to have collective bargaining, because it's not just about pay, it's about working conditions as well. Making sure that, you know, it works for your life and being able to have a say in the job that you're taking, I think is incredibly important. And we know that that has been beaten up in the Republican-controlled legislature for going on 15 years now. And if we're going to make changes in this state, these are some of the changes that Democrats would like to be able to see.
We're talking to State Representative Jody Emerson about higher education. And it's just my own opinion on this is it feels like the pendulum is swinging back towards something closer to equilibrium in the sense of how we look at the different types of higher education. We had heard for years that people in the trades, technical colleges and things like that, felt like, you know, the people in the ivory towers were looking down their noses, you know, and that everybody was supposed to go to college. How many times have we heard college is not for everybody? So then there was this emphasis on the trades and on technical colleges and things like that, to the point where I, as, you know, an unabashed supporter of liberal arts, felt like it had flipped. And now there are all these people looking down their noses at higher education. Like, why would you go to college or university? And I feel like we're finally getting back to a point where people go, you know, we don't have to be fighting one or the other. Let's support all the different ways that you can have a healthy, educated workforce and citizenry in the state of Wisconsin. That is that too much to ask?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, this package really, some of the bills focus specifically on the universities of Wisconsin, but student success and retention, you know, that is for both the technical schools and the UW. And we need both. If we look at a medical industry, we need the x-ray techs, the ultrasound techs, all of those folks trained at the technical schools. And then we need the RNs and the docs trained at the universities. Both are true. You know, when we look at the roads that we drive on every single day, yep, the road builders need that technical training that comes from the either their apprenticeships or the technical colleges. But we also need the engineer to design the roads that the road builders build. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the great things about the universities of Wisconsin and our technical schools is that they are present in all 72 counties, whether it's a campus or whether it's research that they are doing on behalf of a local Lake Altoona to help the sediment go away, or perhaps they're working with the local governments to help write grants to get better projects done in their area. There's not a corner of this state that isn't part, that doesn't benefit from our universities of Wisconsin and our Wisconsin college technical system. We need to have good discussions about these, make sure that they are fully funded to the best that we can do, so that we've got a well-trained and workforce of the future.
One note on YouTube from PJ says, corporate America caused the problem by requiring a college degree for entry-level jobs that don't exist. I believe that was called the paper ceiling. And yeah, I'm not going to put it all on there. But again, I feel like we're doing a better job of getting back to equilibrium and having, you know, the right-sized qualifications for jobs. But that means the right-sized support for every level of education as well. And some of that is coming through this package of bills introduced by State Representative Jody Emerson of Eau Claire. Jody, always great to talk to you. Thanks for getting up and being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, and go Brew Crew.
There you go. All right. Talk to you later. Thank you. And also, Jody is doing a great job of talking about Universities of Wisconsin. That's the official name now. Some of us are going to call it UW System forever. But anyway, Jane Matinier tells us what's coming up on her program next here across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
We are joined now by Jane Matinier, conveniently named host of Matinier on Air, along with Greg Bach, coming up in just a little bit here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Jane, good morning. How was your weekend?
It was wonderful. Obviously happy about the Brewers winning.
Mm-hmm.
That is a great thing. And the Packers pulled it out yesterday, so that's all good. And
yeah,
people are happy.
People are happy. See how nobody's talking about the Badgers? See, we concentrate on the happy stuff.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Exactly. See? What? I had no idea. There's some other good news that I'm just seeing now from this morning in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So I'm probably completely stealing Greg Bach's thunder, but it says here, the Laughing Tap is moving to the former Watts Tea Shop location. So I know Greg has been extremely busy on that. And that was announced that at the end of the 20th anniversary of the Milwaukee Comedy Festival. So pass along our congratulations to Greg for the new digs.
I will do so. He's very excited, and this was always the plan. They've always been looking for a new space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be great when it comes back.
I hope I'm wrong, but I'm betting he did not take my advice and basically video the entire search, because in post-production, think of what a great series you could make out of a reality show of a bunch of comedians looking for a new place to put their comedy club. You
know? Oh, the potential. Yes. And huge potential for it. Yep.
Not only for the funny, but comedians can also be rather cruel to each other. A little, shall we say, biting, you know?
Oh, extremely.
So I'm looking forward to hearing Greg talk all about the experience at some point here. But there's so much more coming up on Matinier on Air. What other things are you talking about this week?
Well, we are Shelley Pittman, Civic Media's news director, is going to be joining us after 9:30. We're to talk about the rejection, at least in Mount Pleasant, of that data center. And then the late, it sounds like a little late, opposition to a data center in Port Washington. We're going to talk about that when we lead off the show. And also, I wanted, George Stephanopoulos had J.D. Vance on yesterday.
Oh, yes, yes.
That was really... You know, that's the way to do it. When you get a politician on who refuses to answer your questions, George Stephanopoulos, I thought, handled it in exactly the right way.
It is and nobody can quibble with it, because to set this up, the current border czar, Tom Homan, is recorded as accepting $50,000 in cash.
In a fast food bag
last year.
As one does.
Yes, as one does. As part of an FBI investigation into corruption. Now, again, this was during the Biden administration, when you were actually looking for things like, you know, corrupt people who would accept bribes. Mm. Well, now the Trump administration takes over. The investigation conveniently disappears, but there's still one lingering question. Did Tom Homan keep the $50,000 bribe, my words, or did he give it back? Was he required to give it back? It's a very simple question. And the vice president of the United States is only the latest Trump administration official who can't seem to or won't seem to answer whether that bag of cash went back to taxpayers or not.
Well, and whether or not, so, okay, so Tom, let's say he kept the cash. Did you pay taxes on your bribe?
Yeah.
Not having taken many bribes in the course of my life, I'm not sure exactly what the protocol is.
The protocol I actually know this. I know that if you get that, much like in gambling, you have to report, you have to pay taxes on it.
You do. So yes. I would have to call my tax guy and said, look, I took another bag full of $50,000 in cash. Mm-hmm. I guess I have to report this. Shucks.
Yeah. And look, somebody else will have to investigate it as a bribe. Of course, that investigation, again, mysteriously disappeared.
Yeah.
But yes, he could still theoretically face tax evasion, but he won't answer the question as to whether he had it. So when J.D. Vance was tap dancing and going, how many, I don't know what to say. And finally, just George Stephanopoulos just cuts him right off.
It was so great.
Perfect.
It was a thing of beauty. It really was.
I'm just glad that you see this, because I don't like sounding like an old man all the time saying how Tim Russert was the last guy to ask these kinds of questions. I need a new generation of people. Now, George Stephanopoulos is not part of the new generation, but I truly need the next Sam Donaldson, who's out there, you know, who's asking these tough questions, or the original gang from 60 Minutes. And we're just not getting that. We're getting so much of what you would call access journalism that I am so glad to hear that you're going to be, you know, calling attention to the right way to hold an administration accountable.
Well, and you bring up such a good point, Pat, because Donald Trump keeps saying now that they're going to cut drug prices by 1,500%. There has not been one follow-up question from a reporter on how that math works.
How does that math?
And I don't math myself, but there are people who do. And I know you cannot reduce something's cost by 1,500%.
No.
My statin guy is going to be paying me. They're going to pay me money now, apparently.
Right. And I'm pretty sure that that's not what's going to be happening here. And again, these are things that, I don't know, in the prior administration would have been merciless amounts of coverage. And we don't seem to be getting that here. So that's why we're celebrating this one nugget.
Yes.
Of accountability in the Sunday morning interviews, because the Sunday morning interviews, quite honestly, have become so useless lately without the appropriate follow-up, that it's nice to see something as basic as a repeated follow-up until you understand that this guy's just not going to answer. So
yeah,
that's all good.
It was a thing of beauty.
So
it was. Yes,
it was. I know. And then, of course, the previewing some Brewers action against the Dodgers tonight.
Brewers and Dodgers in action. Hopefully we can just, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, boom, boom, boom. It'll just be done.
Oh, I like 1, 2, 3, 4, boom, boom, boom.
1, 2, 3, 4, boom, boom, boom.
There you go, Parker. That's it. That's what we need.
It'll be done.
And we're gonna do it. Brewers and four. Love
it. So.
Jane, Matt, and Eric coming up after the news here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you, Jane. Have a great day.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. See you next week.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you very much, Parker. Thank you as well. And thanks to all of you for being part of our morning here, powered by Up North News across the Civic Media Radio Network. Up North News is part of Courier, a pro-democracy news network at CourierNewsroom.com. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.